So she's, you know, he's Mother's Invention or the band. And he says, he used to claim that he formed the group back in 64, 65 on Mother's Day. So she goes, Happy Mother's Day to him. She's not saying Happy Mother's Day to her mother. Happy Mother's Day to him. Then she says, mainly, dot, 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 Happy Mother's Day to all of you who know the perilous journey of saying no to horror again and again, even if it's family. Family in quotes. Even if it's family, in order to protect and preserve the real family of your own making, the family of your heart. See how damning this is? Happy Mother's Day to all of you who know the perilous journey of saying no to horror again and again, even if it's family, so her mother caused horror, in order to protect and preserve the real family of your own making, the family of your heart. These holidays can be, dot, 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 and then quotes, activating, shall we say. So it's like Christmas for her. It brings back old bad memories, it sounds like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These holidays can be activating, shall we say. If you are lucky to come from a great family and share that with your own family, be grateful. I learned how to love from not having love. My longing to have a family like yours planted a seed in my heart. Never underestimate the power a loving family transmits. I wish those mothers and families some special love today. Spending time, spending time today and every day with people who are inherently good and kind and whose actions are nurturing and reciprocal. Real family may not be who you grew up with, but it just might be everywhere else. Run, don't walk away from anything less than the best. And she capitalized the best, like Frank does in his poem, which ends, music is the best, and that's capitalized the best. Then she says, some public mothers I especially love. Sinead O'Connor, Kate Bush, Bjork, Angelina Jolie. Now, my first reaction is, they're all whack jobs, right? Isn't Sinead O'Connor and Kate Bush and Bjork eccentric?
They're totally crazy, yep.
Yeah, in their, they may not be privately, but they got
to find themselves. But
so she's like Sarah, little Sarah, who identifies with all the maniacs because she's a maniac and tries to comfort the maniacs like Kiggy, and ends up in an interesting situation. This is something that Little Sarah would say, but that's odd. Some public mothers I especially love, Sinead O'Connor, Kate Bush, Bjork, and Angelina Jolie. And then she says, and some private ones. So Megan, Molly times three. Molly might be Molly Ringwald, who did that movie when Dweezil was 15. Forget what it was called. Jackie, Amira, Claudette, Chi-Chi, Lee, Sharon, Kate, Pamela times two. That would be Pamela DeBar, the major, most famous groupie. She did a book called I'm with the Band, and you know, she was the nanny for Moon when she was a baby. Pretty sure she was around the house doing that. Sheila, Stephanie, Ann times two, don't know who that is. Melissa times two, Jesse, Aaron, Beverly. Now Beverly may be Beverly D'Angelo, the actress, who was a close friend of the family. Alice, Nicole, Bika, and Christy. So, isn't that quite that's the first time she's been real honest about her relationships. I mean, she did a novel, America the Beautiful, about the daughter of a famous artist and a new age wacky mother. So, I guess that's about Frank and her and Gail a little bit, but to really come, she's really mad. Now, remember the New York Times were upset that Dweezil posted his letter and made it public, and then Ahmed came back. Yeah. Said, why are you making this stuff public? So you had that, and now you have this. I wonder if the New York Times picked it up, but that's
yeah. And then Dweezil posted pictures of him and his uncle Bob.
Who did a book? Listen to this. You know this? He did a book on Frank, his life with Frank when they were young, and he does not mention Gail.
Right.
In the whole book.
I know. And so
my theory is that that's what knocked Gail over. That book came out and then she was dead in a few weeks. Or faked her death or transitioned or didn't die or whatever, but the story came out that she died and that was a few weeks after the book was released. Can't help thinking
that. Did you see the picture on Moon's Facebook about this picture that Frank drew for Moon, and it says, a picture of God for Moon. And it has a, you know, like...
What's the date?
I don't know what date it was.
No, aren't you looking at it right now?
Yeah, but, I mean, she just posted it recently, but I don't know when he wrote this.
I know, but what's the... Oh, there... No, there's something. You made me... You made me cry, you fuck. There's something she sewed or liked, but I'm scanning up. And
okay,
it's quite obvious
so,
what you're talking about. And it gives the date.
Okay, she shows a lot of photos of stuff in her house that's hanging on her wall. And it's around her stairwell. There's lots of things, like little things that she's gathered. Okay,
yeah.
May 17th, I think it's the date that
okay.
she posted that. And... there's several pictures, and one of the photos is of a framed.
Oh yeah, May 17th.
Paper.
She says, "My cheery religious-y trinkets, aka
right.
soul medicine." So she's showing
yeah.
all her private stuff here.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one of the things is a picture of is something that her dad wrote for her, and she framed.
Is this a gold frame?
Yeah, gold frame.
Yeah, there it is.
It says, a picture of God.
Of God for Moon. Written in Frank. It looks like Frank's...
it looks like a fractal. Looks like he drew
it like a
fractal.
It's got a cross with two arms by the shoulders, two lines, right?
It looks like...
And then there's no leg. Well, wait a minute. It looks like... And there's no leg, but there's an arrow. Now,
yeah.
Or it's a penis. No, no, it's an erection.
No, it's a fractal. It's like,
well, it's very abstract. I don't get a fractal from it, but it's symbolic of something.
It's a triangulation.
There's no triangle there. It's the XY axis.
You have an XYZ axis. Axis.
Where's the Z?
The arrow.
You got a vertical and a horizontal.
Yeah. And then you have the arrow.
Oh, okay, you're calling the arrow as a Z. All right.
Yeah. And then you have these little arms coming up, which are like remind me of RNA.
Okay, but look, you've got a cross, and that's the Catholic thing. He was brought up Catholic. But the cross is, according to McLuhan, the resonant interval. So it's a picture of the gap, okay,
right.
resonant interval, which Cameron makes a lot out of. And then it's got two directions, that, which are arms. It also has a little head. The cross seems to have a space between the little dotted
little
line at the top.
Yeah, little head. Okay, yeah.
So it's partly the famous Renaissance image of, you know, man, Leonardo da Vinci's image. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Very sketchy version of that. And this the arrow can be an erection, or it indicates depth. Like it's a tail. Could be a tail.
Yeah.
Could be God. It could be the devil. Lots to project in there. So it's a Rorschach blot test. Well, that's pretty good. So it's good in that way. You can project all kinds of things into it.
I know. I love it. So
who has ever drawn a picture of God? I don't know if people.
I know.
Who has
ever drawn a picture of God for their child?
Yeah, like you're supposed to not be able to see him.
Here, let me draw a picture for you.
This is what he looks
like.
Awesome. Now, like, when did she get it? How old was she? Did she answer? So it says here. Now that is cool.
Might have a year. I can't read it, though.
What'd you say? The year, right.
It might have a year, but it's too small to read.
Right.
Zoom in on it, maybe.
But there may be in the comments. Let's look at the people who comment on it, see if I recognize any names. There's Lorraine Belcher. Now, Lorraine Belcher was the woman who made the porno tape with her. I would get with Frank in 1965, in March 65. Now, she was the one, I don't know if she had, the locals didn't like the fact that there was a white woman with a black baby. and it would sort of walk around outside the studio. I think that's what it is. Now, that might have been Lorraine, but I'm not sure. But Lorraine's a very interesting person, so she's hanging out with Frank. So they make this fake porno tape in March 75 and get busted for it. This sales guy, this cop, pretended he was a salesman. I want to have this for my party with my buddies. Make a porno thing. So they, Frank says that he and Lorraine got on a bed and bounced the springs and made ridiculous noises. It was very hokey what they did. And then when they presented it to when the guy came in to take it, he suddenly brought out his badge and arrested Frank. So Lorraine was a witness to that. She later, I don't know if they were lovers or whatever, but she later lived at Frank's house. She's like the mistress that you quoted me an hour ago.
Oh, yeah, the Australian or whatever.
Right.
She said Australian mistress.
Well, maybe he had several, but Lorraine lived there. It comes out, nobody knew about it, but she lived there in the 80s with Frank, or in the 70s, another partner of his while Gail was there. And then she went on to marry a famous New York sculptor or artist, big artist in the New York kind of world, Chamberlain, John Chamberlain, I think his name is. And now she is, she divorced him, and now she's with the famous underground cartoonist, can't remember his name, San Francisco guy. What did he do? And I recommend the interview with her. I may have posted it on my site. I should repost it for you. You should read about her. You're going into details of all these guys. Belcher and cartoonist. Let's put that in. And he's ill, and so she's caring for cartoonist guy, who's like, you know, as famous almost as R. Crumb, same generation. S. Clay Wilson, maybe that's his name. Let's just check that. And you might, if you don't know him, look him up. S. Clay Wilson. We're having a nice stroll through something here.
Yeah. I'm looking him up.
Yeah, he's got a Facebook page. There we are. Oh, look at that. S. Clay. Oh, I have to look at this. So she's writing on it. S. Clay Wilson. Lorraine says, Wilson's biographer, Patrick Rosencrantz, there's a picture, came over with the effervescent, this is November 2015, came over with the effervescent Susan Stern on Thursday for a visit. And she says, I am bereft, having missed taking a photo of her. Here you can see volume one in Patrick's hands. So that would be S. Clay Wilson,
wow.
Carol. Are you looking at it?
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
And the new volume two, Demons and Angels in Wilson's. Volume three will be, so volume two is in S. Clay Wilson's hands. Volume three will be out this coming summer. They're all available on Fantagraphics or through Amazon. Volume two has been selling slowly, so I'm asking nicely now, go out and buy it. I don't want to have to come to your houses and check to see if you're keeping up or if a spanking is in order. It is filled with art, interviews with his compadres, other artists and various friends, crackpots and malcontents, so it makes entertaining reading, exciting viewing of his drawings, cute notes and illustrated letters. But beyond my nagging threats, I'm pleased to tell you that we had a really lovely visit and some sparkling conversation which kept the man, meaning S. Clay Wilson, smiling for the duration. It was a happy afternoon. Thank you, Patrick and Susan, for taking the time to come over. Always a pleasure. I have to monitor this a little more, see who's on here. But she's lived with Zappa. She lived with John Chamberlain, top American sculptor. Now she's with the top cartoonist. She could write an interesting book herself, you know. She's been with key people in all media.
Really?
A few media.
Crazy.
So, yeah, interesting. So why, so she's the first to sign Moon's, the picture of Frank. The picture of the god.
Yeah.
And John Kaminsky, I heard of him. So going down among the names there's 36. 90% of them I've never heard of. They're not familiar names.
No, I don't know.
I wonder if I should put my name on there. Should I like it?
Go ahead. Do it.
Yeah, what do you do? How do you do it? You just hit the blue thing?
hit the light, or you can just type a comment in on your comment line.
Okay, no, I'm not going to make a comment. But where? How will I see my name? I want to see.
You could put the like button, like.
I click the like button,
the
and when I do
up,
it, it up and. Yeah,
and
I did that.
Say you. Yeah, you can do that.
Well, I'm looking at the list of names, and it doesn't say me at the bottom.
Really?
Well, maybe.
Are you on Moons? Moons, or are you on Clay Wilson?
I'm on Moon. I'm doing May. I mean, just click the picture of God.
Yeah.
Anyways, no indication that I clicked on it.
Really?
But I do. If you do it singularly, it'll say, you like this. But it's not saying that to me.
Yeah, it's saying that for me. I just clicked it. But all the pictures, like under her main post where she has multiple pictures, it's not just a picture of God. I'll go to the separate one of God. And see if I can click on that.
Oh, here's a block. Maybe that's someone who could speak. Okay, blocked. Will you speak?
Say Bob's Bert.
Beg your pardon?
Bert.
Bert.
Oh, Bert. Yeah, okay. What time is it now? Seven in the morning.
My time.
Yeah, I think it's too late for Roxana. She has to work today, but she might be coming in on Sunday. Bert. I've had you, I said, I'll see you on Sunday. You never come back Sunday morning, Bert, last few times.
Yeah, last week I had a disturbance, so I had to handle it. So
normally you would come back?
Yes.
Okay, so you may be there tomorrow.
Yes, I will.
Okay, so Bert, you've been here very long?
Yes, I have been here the whole time. Actually, listen.
What, like an hour and a half? No.
Yeah.
The blog.
No, not on the phone.
Not on the phone.
Internet.
How long have you been on the phone?
10 minutes.
Okay. Are you enjoying this dialogue with Big Sarah?
Yes.
Yeah.
The whole conversation.
Yeah, subtle messages are being released.
Yes.
Let's see. Yeah. So what we're looking at Moon's thing. What do you think of that? Well, what do you think of what she said about her mother, Bert?
That's really it's like almost like a psychiatric family mess that's being aided over the waves, and it's really sad to really see the side of a Moon Unit and Dweezil, because that's really that's pretty rough to be washing that out in the mainstream media about how their mother treated them and how sour they are. Hopefully they don't go too sour too long, but it's really sad. Really,
well, you know, this Ion said, now listen to this, back when Frank did, it's on the original How Ionic. Why don't you remember we talked about Beefheart and how he didn't die? Yeah. Well, around that time, they put a statue up to Frank in Baltimore. I think it was like September 19th, 2011 or something. And so there was YouTube footage of it, but I didn't see Moon. So I asked Ion, is Moon there or going to be there or whatever? He said, no. He pointed out that she didn't like Gail. So that's been confirmed.
Wow.
Yeah, she refused to go to the statue thing.
It seems that she does have some humor and she's working on it, but like I think it was a passage that Sarah just read about what she posted on Mother's Day. It seems like she's working with, but hopefully she's able to get over it. Maybe she needs to get the drops to move beyond that. But that's pretty.
Well, why can't
tough
you be mad?
Situation.
Look, from the point of view
mad
of those that have been. Now listen, Bert. What I've heard about Gail is absolutely terrible. Okay, from people, from relatives of hers who told people who were close to the situation, who told me, very bad scene that Gail created. But you have to say, well, I don't know. This could be all kinds of jealousies. Who knows what Gail does to people or why people say these things. But this is the first time the direction I could think about Gail has been confirmed by Moon. I like it for it, her being honest and telling me, confirming what she heard, what I had heard about Moon's relationship with Gail.
Yeah.
I think
I mean,
she's justified.
She could be mad. It's just
Well, she's justified to tell the truth.
Yes, but just as long as she doesn't be bitter and, you know, 20 years from now, she's
She doesn't look bitter.
No.
Her face is very aggressive, energetic smile.
Good.
Right, Sarah? Oh, did Sarah go away? What is this? Where
yeah,
are we at?
That's very accurate.
About Moon's face?
Yeah.
She's got a very intelligent, aggressive face, or some kind of aggressive, or intense. I think it's like, it's what a shot of my face laughing would have that intensity.
No, she's a little bit like, she tells a story on her Facebook about how she used to work at a store where she, you know, just had a job, a regular job. And people would come in, they say, you look familiar, like, I don't know where I know you from. And she's like, from the radio, from the movies, from, you know,
she said
TV.
That to them? She
yeah.
said that to them?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she was like pissed that they didn't know where they
Well, because she didn't stay in those media very long. Okay, she does Valley
yeah.
Girl in 82. She
right.
does a couple of movies like her brother in mid-80s. They have a TV show, the Zappa family. Zappa, Frank said it was the antidote to the Osbourne. Who is it? Danny? Who are the...
Osmonds,
yeah. And Andy Byron is the alternative to the Danny Osmond family. But they only did like 6 or 7 episodes. It was canceled. And then she's... In the 90s, she at some point is complaining that her last name is preventing her from getting gigs. Directors find out she's connected to Frank, and for whatever reason, they reject her. So she started to complain that her Hollywood life was not working out because of the stigma of her name. She also was a bit of a comedian, did a few comedic things in the early 90s, you know, in clubs. And then she put out her novel... got good reviews, but I don't know how well it sold. Then she writes an article years later, which is in Barry Miles' biography of Zappa, which comes out in 2005 or so. And in that, she spells out how fucked up her whole upbringing was, and where she says in this note to her mother, she never had felt that she was loved. I mean, she'd have to make appointments to your father. So all the worst part of what people might think was irresponsible on Frank's level, she spells it out. She's been honest about her bitterness, but I never thought of her as being affected by it in her public persona. She can perform if required. You know what I mean? She's not sulking. This nice picture of her, at some club looks like she's being a comedian at the top of her Facebook. That's a nice energetic picture. I think she's got, maybe she's bitter that I have a lot of talent. And I could have done a lot of neat stuff if they had hired me. She probably does have a pretty smart brain. But, you know, she got into yoga. That's not too cool, is it? She meditates. That's not cool anymore. But she was way back there. Remember, she's 50. She'll be 50. She's 49. She was born in 67. So she'll be 50 next year, right? Yeah. So she's 49. She's over the hill, man, in normal career things.
I think she's just, like, happy that she's having kind of a very calm existence in yoga. That part of her life is very calm.
Yes, I think she's as tapped in as anybody can be until they encounter Ion. Then there might be a bit of a test or a challenge. You know what I mean?
That would be awesome if she could do that.
Oh, remember, Moon visited JW.
That's right.
Really?
Oh, we got a story for somebody who doesn't know it, Bert. Yay! We can rely on the old riffs, and I don't have to think up something new. I'll just tell the old story. You don't know this. Back about 2000.
I can't remember that.
Yeah, back about 2009. It was early. Whack job JW says to me, Moon Unit visit. No, it was almost like, what's the name of Zappa's daughter? I said, Moon Unit. And he said, yeah, she visited me today. I go, what the fuck? Come on. Fucking get a grip, fucking asshole, you idiot. Come on. We got to do a session. I want to talk to Ion. I'm not talking to you. And he makes this ridiculous statement. Like, how the hell? And I said, where did you do it? Oh, I heard a knock on the door. I opened the door, and there was Moon. There was a woman, young woman, who introduced herself as Moon Zappa or whatever she said. So I invited her in. And I'm there. How did she find your place? You know, what is this? And with JW, you don't know what JW you're talking to, what world, what jokester, what. You know what I mean? And I didn't know that as much back in 2010 when he told the story. It's like, this is ridiculous. JW is nuts. But anyways, they spent, I think he said, like 45 minutes, and she basically wanted to get some ideas about her father confirmed. And I think it was about him being murdered. That she felt that or knew it or something. And JW or maybe Ion came through, I don't know. So some stabilizing information was given to her by JW. And then she left.
So did she really come there or did she come there? And
you can't tell with JW. You can't fucking confirm anything with JW. The only confirmation of the fantastic scenarios we got two of them. The second one is us seeing the hologram split from JW's body and become a floating hologram. We saw that on Skype. Well, that's the most amazing thing you could see, but that was pretty good. The other story is that, you know, a lot of Ionettes of the first wave of Ionettes used to visit JW in his bedroom or in his home. And so Sheila came, and JW was telling Sheila maybe in a private session that she came. And I don't know if, JW says they come to his bedroom at night when he's sleeping and they don't have any clothes on. Like his wife has seen Brian a few times. Like, JW
and
tells
Chad,
the story.
Chad, I remember hearing that.
About Brian or Chad?
Chad, I thought.
No, it's Brian who JW's wife, I don't know, stirred, woke up.
Okay.
And then JW was talking to her, and so she goes, or she wakes up JW and she goes, it's just Brian. And then she goes back to sleep. But, so Brian's her nude. But the thing is, the next day, JW's mother-in-law says, who were you with last night? Who was that woman walking around with you with no clothes on? And it was Sheila. Now, the mother-in-law, hey, wait, you're disappeared. Get your phone fixed.
To me?
You're far away. Yeah.
Like no, I'm here. I'm eating popcorn.
Yeah. Right. So I didn't talk to the mother-in-law, but JW said the mother-in-law said that. And maybe it was said to Sheila in a private session. So that's the only confirmation of JW post-ionic things he says, right, Carol? There's not too many other people around to verify what JW goes through. Now, when the lawn burnt down, his son confirmed that, and that was the other JW that didn't go to New York. So I don't know if Moon went there, and is it an alternative Moon? If you ever meet at Moon, ask her. Do you know what Ion is? No. Okay, so you didn't go visit somebody named JW? No. Or maybe she'll say yes, but it's up in the air, but that's a story. And so isn't that interesting? I take it as a sign of her intelligence that some part of her did check us out.
Yeah.
Or knew to go to JW.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And put that on your Facebook. Ask her on her Facebook. You see, if you ask Moon about Ion, you have to include the fact that they will not admit that they know, and they'll deny it. You have to really investigate this. If you met Moon, you'd have to, and she said, no, I wouldn't take that as an answer. I'd have to grill her a little bit more and find out why she's not accepting it, why she won't admit it, or she didn't ever meet JW. But it's hard. You can't go on surface investigation. You have to really take Moon aside and get into it.
Right. Yep. Bert,
so,
did you read the Cameron McEwen writing?
Yes, I did. I read, actually, I want to talk to Bob about that. I read the What is Myth? Or When is Myth? When is Myth?
Yeah.
Article that,
yeah, that's a good one.
Keeps, quite interesting. Also, I started reading his, what is it? I don't even have it right here, but I read also yesterday the Einstein article. That
Relativity and Topology? And Topology? Yes, that's a good one.
I started reading that yesterday. It's quite
because you heard my dialogue with him. You heard my dialogue with him where he said that.
No, I didn't get that. That's what I'm anxious to listen to. No, I did not. Ed must have posted that late last night.
No. I must have posted it?
No, Ed must have posted the dialogue that you had with him because, I didn't see that until this morning.
Okay. When we're talking about what we're going to talk about next, he mentions, I'm doing a series on Einstein and McLuhan, so I want to talk about that. Mm-hmm. So I said, yeah, I read one of them, I'll read the others. But that might be in the unrecorded part. Okay?
Okay.
The last 10, 15 minutes got knocked off because we would be saying that at the end, I think, unless it happens earlier. The point is that, you haven't listened to the thing, but you went for the Einstein stuff. Why did you do that?
I don't know, Bob. I just went onto his website and just scrolled through his articles, and then I saw something about Einstein. I said, well, that'd be interesting, and I printed it out
Friday. All right. So, yeah, that's a natural way. That's understandable. Yeah, you see the name Einstein.
Well, what I wanted to ask you about is Cameron was saying that in his letter that he posted, that you were, he was giving you credit for the five bodies, but he said that the five bodies were attributed to the sociologist, the philosopher John O'Neill.
I've addressed that twice now. What do you mean? Aren't you listening? I talked about that half an hour ago.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. And it was with.
This is another Sarah.
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
He was talking to you, Sarah.
Yeah, you better apologize. Bert knows. I've talked about it twice tonight.
No.
About an hour ago. About an hour ago.
Yeah. So I'll do it again,
all
Sarah,
right,
since you're interested in it.
All right.
Several people through the years have said, oh, did you get that from John O'Neill? And I never met him. Mm-hmm. I never read his books. I only know about him because I did know Frank Zangroni taught at York with John. They were kind of more leftist philosophers. And he would mention John O'Neill to me. So I did get a couple of John O'Neill books a year or two ago when I got Don Thiel's library. He had some John O'Neill books. But I never saw The Five Bodies. That's 1985. I didn't come up with The Five Bodies the way I mean it until the late 90s. I think. And so I've never read his book, and I explained to Cameron the other day, because he brought it up. I wasn't aware of what he wrote there that you're reading. And I pointed out to him, no, I was not influenced by him. I think I once looked at the book in a store after so many people had brought it up, and I looked at it and said, no, that's nothing to do with my stuff. Or it's not anywhere near. But I'm now going to, maybe I'll buy the book and find out what is it that he says that makes people think of it. So Cameron's going to have to correct that. Well, if the book is somehow like my bodies, then we have to say that this guy came up with the same idea independently of me. But it's not true to say I'm influenced by it. I didn't know about it.
I bet it's not anywhere near the same five bodies as you. I mean.
No, I haven't read it. I don't know. I doubt it. Nobody knows what I know or what I lay out. But it would be interesting what it does say. Get on Amazon and order the book, Carol.
What's it? Who's the author?
John O'Neill. You guys can all hear this. We're going to order right now the text. Carol's rapid typing. She's already at Amazon.com. She's already writing in John O'Neill, O-N-E-I-L-L, I think, or I-E. And put in Five Bodies, Carol. You got to put in the title because it's Five Bodies, right? We're looking. It didn't come up right away. Maybe we spelled O'Neill wrong, Carolyn. Gee, it's not available. Well,
apostrophe.
Oh, apostrophe. Okay, see what happens.
That could make all the difference.
The Holy Thursday and their sacred self. Jesus, no books by.
Is he Canadian?
Yeah, you need. I think we may be spelling O'Neill wrong.
Like, how can it be wrong? I mean.
Put O'Neill and York University.
It's N-E-I-L-L-E-L-L. It is wrong.
Yeah.
I'm spelling it wrong.
Well, how do you know? Where did you spell it?
On Amazon. I'm spelling it N-I.
Oh, there it is, Kim. No, we found it. How did you? Oh, you put in York University and that brought it up. And that's not on Amazon, Carolyn, is it?
No.
All right. So for some reason, let's see what it says about it. So we found it. It's called Five Bodies, subtitled Refiguring Relationships. That's chemical body talk. Okay. The book was first published in 1985 in the USA by Cornell University Press and was nominated for the John Porter Award, in brackets, sponsored by the Canadian Sociology and Anthropology Association, which is, he's a sociologist. A path-breaking book, it offered a framework for the growing field of the sociology of the body and opened up, quote, the body, unquote, for sociological research. But that sounds like the chemical body. This new edition has been substantially, so there's a new one, has been substantially revised and updated to include Dobbs and shit. Dobbs fucking ripped off John O'Neill, and we'll see Dobbs in court within 3 weeks.
What?
This is just written the other day. Yeah, they're coming after me.
Oh.
We hear he's moved to the States, but we heard that Stang arrested him. There's all this shit right there in the fucking review for Stage Publishing.
And Bob's pointing to the...
I'm pointing at what's there. It's right there. As if Carol Wood doesn't believe it. So this new edition has been substantially revised and updated to address today's issues of the body in modern life, community, and politics. John O'Neill examines how embodied selves and relationships are being reshaped, and now what is he going to say by what, right? Are being reshaped and refigured, and how the embodied figures of the polity, economy, and society represent the contested notions of identity, desire, wholeness, and fragmentation. Ah, fucking chemical body. The guy hasn't even got... The big thing is, does he include McLuhan at least the discarnate effect? That's what we'll see. He focuses upon those cultures... He focuses upon those cultural practices through which we map our macro-micro worlds. Then it has some topics. Articulating a cosmology. Another topic, a body politic. Another one, a productive and sumptive, it's like a new word, productive and sumptive economy. Sort of like productive, consumptive. And then the fourth one, a biotechnological frontier of human design and transplantation. Okay, they're going to talk about slightly altering the body through genetics, but it doesn't look good. As a matter of fact, his book is fucking wrong. It doesn't even deal with the real five bodies. I will write a review about this fucking thing once I read it. So we must order this fucking shit. $56. Good. With good tax deduction. Get the $120 fucking hardcover, Carol. Fucking $56 shit. Get the expensive one. It's only 97 pages, Carol. Go back. 97 pages. This is... It's that, yeah, $97
a page.
It's like fucking a little pamphlet. Holy shit,
my gosh.
This needs to be corrected. This definitely needs to be corrected.
Oh, it's highly overpriced.
Yeah, $56 for 97 pages. Okay, well done. I love getting new books. I don't read them, but I like looking at the cover and that's about it.
Okay, now
look at the cover, that's it. But I have it for backup when I have to go to court someday. Then I'll fucking look at it. So let's see. So you wanted to ask about the book? Is that what we were saying?
No, I'm just curious about what he was saying in that. He was quoting O'Neill like he's like very big.
Look.
Carol's found something. Right.
Quick, Bob. It's got a 1-star review.
You got one review.
And it's the number of stars is 1, but there is one. I found it on Amazon in a roundabout way, so we can get that.
What do you mean? What are we getting?
We can get the book, but let's look at the one.
Well, I knew we were getting the book.
But I didn't want to buy from Canada on the other site.
We're getting it on Amazon?
Yeah, sorry to say, but I regret buying
this
book.
Okay, this is M. Hurley. Who's M. Hurley? Look on it. This is 2009. And they're saying there's a new edition, right?
Oh, right.
He added 15 pages. He reviewed.
Never mind.
This Hurley guy is relatively educated.
Okay.
I will read it. Sorry to say, but I regret buying this book. In brackets, despite having had a look at the introduction on here, so we can actually see the introduction, Carol, as it is overpriced and incomplete, in quotes. The excerpts from Vico, Guy and Batista Vico is a big influence on James Joyce. He's an important guy. McLuhan talks a lot about Vico. So there's the academic level in this thing. He's going to refer to Vico. Now, I knew fucking Vico, in the Ofenel days, and so I can fucking review that point. The excerpts from Vico are useful. Then he goes, but, and then he goes, comment, dot, dot, dot. For the real deal, see James J. Paxson's book, quote, The Poetics of Personification, 1994, recently released in paperback. Brian Moore's book, Lit and Eco-Criticism, will augment James Paxson's book, but it pales by comparison. The second book, Brian Moore, The Pale Book, has some interesting uses for Immanuel Kant, and his history is also useful and thorough, even if you're not particularly eco-critical, though Paxson's book trumps them all. So it's all chemical body limitation. And it came out, the new version came out February 21st, 2004, and it's in categories. What are the categories, Carol?
Yeah.
Humor and entertainment.
No, general sociology.
Then what's that? Books, humor, entertainment, pop culture. What's that mean?
I don't know.
Let's go on Wikipedia and let's look up John O'Neill, see how old he is. I know he's probably past retirement age. So are you following this, Bert? Are we informing you of this John O'Neill character?
Yes. So we're going to
look at
Wikipedia
that.
Analysis.
Go back.
Yes.
Hey, listen to this. Who is the main dead guy of 911? May Brussel. No, John Judge. Dave Emery used to talk about him. The first guy in the conspiracy view of 911 deals with the fact that the FBI man who was investigating and suspicious and warning everybody, he got killed. His name was John O'Neill, the same fucking name. Whoa, they call it the mysterious death of him. And remember, the story was that he went back and he was there. And then he went back in, and he was already controversial in the FBI, and he went back in, and he never came back out. So let's look at, John O'Neill, York, see what comes up. Yeah, there it is. But is there a Wikipedia on him? He's a emeritus, York professor, emeritus. There he is. This is him here, the philosopher. Now, what are they going to say? They don't give his fucking birth date. This guy is a real snob. How can you be on Wikipedia and keep your birthday off? Wow. No, he isn't. He's a British guy, Carolyn. Yeah, British people are not important. Let's get no wonder. The British guy, he didn't even write it properly. No, look at this one, Carolyn. John P. O'Neill. Is that him?
Mm-hmm. American.
Poet? No.
We have to go up to the York University.
York University Wikipedia.
It's just a list of them.
Yeah. So you would go down alphabetical, Carol. I apologize to all those that find the show too personal tonight. Too much just talking private opinion stuff. Look, nothing comes up. He's really laying low.
Yeah.
John O'Neill, sociologist, but they're asking you to make the website. Maybe you put in sociologist at that and see if that brings up a wiki entry.
Talk more about what Cameron said about space and time.
Mm. Yeah. What about it? You want to say something?
Yeah, I want you to say more about it because, you know, he describes it as something completely different than what space and time is. You know, like what McLuhan thought of space and time was different than what space and time is.
Okay, you got the normal idea of space and time, and then you got Einstein's phrase, space-time continuum. Space and time were debated as concepts at the end of the 19th century in the first part of the 20th century. There's a good book on the debate in culture. I think they were thinking things before Einstein, but then Einstein really made a focus. So artists like Joyce and Duchamp all started looking into this, and then another aspect was looking into the fourth dimension in mathematics, or mathematics would try to describe the fourth dimension. So it was a big debate, and then Wyndham Lewis takes the time and space dialectic and does a lot of interesting stuff in his books on that. So then McLuhan, and you have material landscape. Beg your pardon?
My next project is Wyndham Lewis.
Yours? It's to read Wyndham Lewis?
Yeah.
Yeah, McLuhan says, bless the student. The student is very lucky who discovers Wyndham Lewis. And then he says he can never be popular. It's just too difficult or whatever. But you get a real breakthrough when you read Lewis. It's like something the culture doesn't know. So you have a unique learning with him. So that's good that you're going to do it. Okay, so Lewis talks about space-time. There's a whole section in Finnegan's Wake where James Joyce goes after Einstein, critiques Einstein, and he critiques it by having this debate between Wyndham Lewis and James Joyce. It's called the Ant and the Grasshopper section. And so there's lots of details about space and time in that. Lewis's ideas, Einstein's ideas, and Joyce's. So McLuhan says there's no space and time once you get into the TV era. Might have even been true in the radio era. Electricity, for all intents and purposes, there's no distance between people and there's no time. So that's like a basic way. What's interesting about Cameron... okay, so McLuhan's talking about the technological, relatively you can get anywhere in the world pretty fast, back even in the 50s with jet planes, 50s and 60s. You can get anywhere instantly with telephone. You can now project yourself through the new phones. So there's no time and space now, you know, really none now. So Cameron comes along and starts complicating the issue. He's trying to say there is no, I don't know if he's saying there's no space and time, but you have to recognize that there's simultaneity in time, and he's ionic. All times, all historical dialogues, all philosophical discussions are all happening now, and when you engage seriously the ancient archetypes of philosophy, you are talking to Plato, and they're here, and you're talking to them. How far he would take that in Ionic terms, I don't think he would like the way Ion talks about it. I'm not sure. So that he is intellectually describing post-time, post-space, but he's still intellectual about it. And for me, that's the limitation. But I try not at first to bring up the Ionic. I want to have a dialogue within the normal range of topics. And I find that his writing on the paradox that McLuhan is all about all the time, 24/7, that there's experience beyond and behind or before. So he tries to talk about the nonlinear in a new way to say what McLuhan meant. So after a while, you get used to Cameron's right way of writing, and it'll be correct. But at first, it's odd. Like, he writes time plus times. You know, why say it that way? But he does it, and he finds a good bunch of quotes that that support his interpretation of McLuhan, good quotes from McLuhan. So basically, there's no time in the mind and in what you think and discuss if you're a deep enough thinker, says Cameron. And he says, people don't realize how deep McLuhan is, that he qualifies to be among the great thinkers in history and philosophy and all that. And you have to recognize that all the great philosophers knew that they were talking to the ages, and the ages were part of their present. Even LaRouche says that point. So, but my criticism of Cameron was he objects to people's limited linear concepts about what they think non-time is. And I say, well, aside from your quibbling with their conceptual understanding of no time, what about the fact that television comes in and just wipes everything off the map and it creates a new society completely, regardless of what concepts you put to it? So a lot of what Cameron talked about are conceptual ideas, but he tries to make them fit correctly the perceptual notion that there is no linearity. And so McLuhan is always, he never has one-sided view, is what Cameron's saying. And he says regular McLuhan scholarship doesn't understand that strongly enough. How there is multiple McLuhans, and he's always engaged in an agony of forming a perspective, a notion, a personality, or a perception of this situation. It's an ongoing thing, and you can't categorize McLuhan. Now, some people, a few people might start to say it, but he really emphasizes it by finding really good quotes by McLuhan that support this interpretation of McLuhan. So, when you read it, you've got the disadvantage of knowing Ion. Like, you know, McLuhan is pretty obsolete, but I enjoyed looking at it, and I like Cameron's excellent review of McLuhan, but I'm not learning from it. I'm just learning Cameron's peculiar way of talking about it. Also rereading a lot of great quotes that I may not have read in a long time. So I'm appreciating aesthetically, but I don't consider Cameron ready for Ion.
But it's true that there's so many people that are talking about the anomaly of time that they think it's kind of a false premise.
Yeah.
But you see it in everything, like in Game of Thrones, in Pynchon, and in, you know, Cameron's writing, and McLuhan, and Joyce.
In Fringe.
You see it everywhere.
Everywhere. It's a cliche. And it was a cliche by the time Ion showed up in science fiction and all that. Now, here's the thing. Is Ion, it took a while to get it, and Ion had to say things through the years to build it up. But Ion is saying something new about the non-time that no one's ever heard before, is my suspicion. And, of course, Bert would always agree with me. You agree with that, Bert, right?
Yes. It's a massage. It's really a different, totally different mode that Ion puts on time. I mean,
okay, now, that's a good point, Bert. Listen to this. Cameron brings in the massage level like you're saying. Cameron gets the closest to describing what Ion's saying. But he doesn't know about it. He doesn't know the extra part or something. But he does talk about the massage in that way, Bert, which is interesting.
Hmm.
So he's describing the Ion.
Is it that I believe Ion more than anything else I've read that refers to this?
I mean, ion is...
Now, watch your microphone. Watch your microphone. Don't blur your words.
Ion is the voice that I listen to about time.
Right. Well, here's a main reason. Ion stays here for 5 hours or more to answer every question that you come up with or other people come up with. You talk to Stephen Hawking, he'll give you 15 minutes or something, or you pay and become a student of his, and he says there's no beginning and end, I think, in his 1985 book. He starts talking about it. But it's a very limited access to his mind. But Ion is here forever. Endless.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you believe the guy who shows up more than anybody else and is willing to talk about it and explain it as best they can? That's why we believe Ion. He's the only one with the energy to stay with us.
Yeah, but our ears have been mutated from listening to Ion, that frequency, because you try to listen. I mean, if I listen to anyone else or just try to go out on YouTube and listen to some type of physics lecture, I mean, after like 3 minutes, I turn it off because it's not appealing. But when you listen to Ion, you're talking about Stephen Hawking. I listened to Melting Titanium 28 this week. It's only like 38 minutes, but it talks about black holes. And Ion does a 5-minute imitation of Stephen Hawking. And it's not possible that a human being can do that. It's not possible.
Right. It's probably got deep concepts in it. It's probably got a satire of it and everything else, right? It's genius talking about.
Yeah, see, I mean, it was 3 minutes of so many different subjects of Stephen Hawking, and he's imitating Stephen Hawking talking that it's not possible for a human being to do that.
Right.
It's not possible. So
I'm going to listen to a new phenomenon. He's a new phenomenon. They are a new phenomenon. I'm going to listen to them. No human is equal to it. So
yeah.
I don't take anybody seriously if they're going to pontificate. They've got to be odd, maybe like Corbin. There's someone like going on and on. I try to see how much I can follow what he's saying. You know, that's sort of interesting, but I don't want to hear about any. Nobody's worth. But Cameron is interesting. Because he's quoting McLuhan, and it's a lot of good quotes, and he's writing about him very comprehensively. That, and I'm looking to see how close he gets to Ion, or how what Ion's saying is different. So I'm using Cameron to look. It's always revolving around Ion. You know what I mean? I'm using Cameron as another worthwhile way of looking at what the Ion phenomenon is.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to understand McLuhan. I mean, McLuhan, I understand McLuhan pretty well,
but it's
100%. But let me hold
Cameron,
it. Let me say this sentence. I understand McLuhan 100%, but I'm still interested if McLuhan was a parallel worlder and how much he knew that we're not getting from his writings. I'm still interested in that part of McLuhan.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sarah. What were you going to say?
I like that part that you guys were talking about. Not only in Cameron's thing, but in Brian's piece about Catholicism and what McLuhan was trying to get from that. And that, you know, back when Ion was channeling McLuhan and we were asking him about the Catholic Church, and he kept saying, I am not a member of the Catholic Church. I guess he was never baptized. He just went to Mass. I mean, maybe he was not a Catholic. I don't know what the facts are, but
he did not learn doctrine. He said he did not learn doctrine.
I am not a member of the Catholic Church. And so he, whatever he was trying to figure out from the Mass, he was just trying to figure it out, not as being a member of that and not as being in, you know, a follower of the doctrine or whatever.
Right.
But he was just truly in a classroom trying to figure out some connection, probably to space and time.
Right. He was, you know, the transubstantiation of the Mass, the turning of the food into, what is it, the bread into body, the body of Jesus, and the wine into blood. that's alchemy or something going on there. I think he was interested in that phenomenon itself, and he also saw that that's what language did. Language altered the world, like the mass is supposed to be showing. So he, this is where Cameron is good to read. He will get